I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. President Donald Trump's controversial executive order about immigration inspired spontaneous protests at Philadelphia International Airport Saturday. Attorneys also showed up at PHL, but not merely to demonstrate. WHYY's Jim Saxa reports that Philadelphia's legal community launched its own response over the weekend.
Mary Ciccarelli was settling in for a quiet Saturday afternoon of movies and popcorn when she first saw the news online. People were being detained at Philadelphia International Airport, caught up in President Trump's sudden executive order. Councilwoman Helen Gimm called for a protest. Ciccarelli, an immigration attorney, hoped she could do more than just hold up a sign. But when she got to the airport, customs officials were refusing to let any of the dozen attorneys gathered speak with the detainees.
That's why it was so frustrating. And I mean, I was there and I was, you know, chanting and trying to talk to attorneys that were actually doing a lot more than I was. But
Ciccarelli's referring to an ad hoc legal team of civil rights and immigration lawyers organized that afternoon by the local chapter of the ACLU.
It's a very tight-knit legal community in Philly. We sort of just threw tasks out, you know, by text, phone, email, and people would jump on them.
That's Molly Tack Hooper, an attorney with the ACLU of Pennsylvania. Hooper dropped everything to respond to the detentions.
So I am actually technically on maternity leave right now. I've been home with my six-week-old baby. 2 days ago, though, I just gave up and took down my out-of-office reply saying that I was on maternity leave because there was too much to do.
Lawyers have a reputation for being workaholics, but that's not what spurred Tack Hooper and Ciccarelli into action. Like many of their legal peers, they believe Donald Trump exceeded his constitutional authority, and as members of the bar, they feel compelled to engage the court system to check his executive powers. The ACLU team managed to strike a deal Saturday night with the local United States attorney to release the airport detainees. But the fact that the lawyers never got to speak with the people being held first, even though U.S. Senator Bob Casey and Congressman Bob Brady both asked custom officials to step aside, left lawyer Jonathan Feinberg deeply concerned.
The fact that they, as two members of Congress, two members of the federal government, were not permitted to see detainees held by the very same federal government in their district is really extraordinary.
Those mobilizing are not just lawyers used to working on immigration cases. Business lawyers signed up to represent migrants pro bono. And the local Immigration Bar Association held an emergency meeting calling on members and all attorneys to remain, quote, vigilant. Jim Saxa, WHYY News.
As demonstrators swarmed to airports to protest President Trump's executive order, our region's congressional representatives have had to figure out what they think about the travel ban. More from WHYY's Dave Davies.
You don't have to chase Democrats in Congress to figure out where they stand on Trump's restrictions. Just follow the chanting.
We have a federal judge waiting to hear a stay. We have their legal people, our legal attorneys here ready to be able to file in court.
That's Philadelphia Congressman Bob Brady, who, with Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Bob Casey, joined protesters at the Philadelphia airport over the weekend. New Jersey Congressman Donald Norcross was there, as were Delaware Senator Tom Carper and Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester. Republicans are in a trickier position since their party holds the White House. Six of seven congressional representatives contacted issued statements expressing some concern about Trump's order or its implementation. None was available for an interview except Charlie Dent from the Lehigh Valley, a critic of Trump during last year's campaign. He says the order was overly broad and badly implemented.
It was not properly vetted, and the implementation, as I said, has been very rough, and that's why I called on the administration to halt enforcement of this action until, you know, more people can take a look at it.
Dent, who represents a large Syrian immigrant population, is the only area representative contacted who explicitly called on the administration to stop enforcing the order. Others crafted their own critiques. Bucks County's Brian Fitzpatrick, in his first weeks in Congress, says the president's policy entirely misses the mark in placing a regional focus on a global problem. South Jersey's Frank Lobiondo doesn't object to a pause in the refugee program, but says a hasty execution of the order created widespread problems. And there's Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey, who back during the campaign objected to Trump's call for a temporary ban on Muslims entering the country.
I immediately stood up and said, no, that's not how America works. We don't ban people from this country based on their religion.
Trump's current order is more complex. Toomey declined an interview but issued a statement saying he supports the decision to temporarily suspend the admission of some to improve vetting. He says the order was too broad and poorly explained, though, resulting in denied entry to some who should have been admitted to the country. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Last week, President Trump issued an executive order stripping federal funds from sanctuary cities, places that do not honor federal immigration requests. Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Pat Toomey called it a first step, but has plans to take the issue even further. Keystone Crossroads' Eleanor Klibanoff looks at what that might mean for Pennsylvania.
Walk around the offices of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley, and you'll find a plan to do good hidden behind every door. There's a food bank, a land bank, a work skills class, and programs to assist with affordable housing. Executive Director Alan Jennings pokes his head into an empty classroom crowded with chairs.
This is a community room where we hold, in this case, homeownership seminars. You can see we have some 75-plus people who will be here tomorrow, learning how to become first-time home buyers.
The Community Action Committee counts on local, state, and federal funds for these programs in Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton. The first-time home buyer class, among other programs, is funded through a federal program called the Community Development Block Grant. These grants are the largest source of community development funding in the country. Counties and cities have a lot of autonomy in how to distribute them, to government projects like infrastructure or historical preservation, or to nonprofit groups. Jennings says they're pretty great, if you can get them.
We'd love to be able to rely on them. The demand for services, the need to intervene in the marketplace is easily worse than it's ever been. But the funding has been so restricted over the years.
While community development block grants don't tend to make up a large portion of city or county spending, they can be a big deal to service agencies. Affordable housing advocates, literacy organizations, and groups that serve seniors or people with disabilities are used to seeing these funds get chipped away, little by little. But now, there's a threat to these funds that has nothing to do with budget cuts. Here's Pennsylvania's Republican Senator Pat Toomey on the floor of the Senate in November.
My legislation would withhold community development block grants, which is very cherished by the city governments all across America, if they choose to endanger all of us by continuing to be sanctuary cities.
Philadelphia is an example of a true sanctuary city. Philadelphia police do not proactively communicate with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. If the agency asks the city to hold someone suspected of being in the country illegally, Philadelphia will ignore that request until there's an arrest warrant attached. But there are 32 counties in Pennsylvania that aren't trying to be sanctuaries, yet under Toomey's law, would be treated as such. Lehigh County is one of them. Former Director of Corrections Ed Sweeney says the county jumps through hoops to help ICE as much as it can.
We expend a great deal of government resources to assist them. We send them all of our fingerprints of our new commitments. We send them names and home addresses and place of birth information on all of our new commitments.
They'll even coordinate with ICE so agents can be waiting to pick people up as soon as they're released. The only thing Lehigh County won't do is detain someone without an accompanying judicial order or arrest warrant, which is enough to lose community development block grants under Toomey's bill. So some counties might just start honoring the ICE detainers. Toomey's law would also shield them from any legal liability associated with honoring those detainers, which is a big sticking point. But Sweeney says if the bill passes in its current form, some counties might consider going in the other direction.
If at that point then we're being treated as a sanctuary municipality, then just perhaps we should act like a sanctuary municipality and stop cooperating to the extent that we would be with ICE.
These middle ground municipalities may be forced to pick a side soon. even if Toomey's bill fails, like it did last year, President Donald Trump is moving on a similar plan. The Pennsylvania legislature is also considering a bill that would withhold some state funds from sanctuary cities. Most counties in Pennsylvania likely couldn't make up that gap. But even though groups like the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley might lose precious dollars, that doesn't mean Alan Jennings wants the county to start honoring ICE detainers.
I'd like to go down, at least in a little bit of local history I've had any impact in, as being one who did the right thing, even when it got me in trouble.
His group serves anyone in need in the Lehigh Valley, regardless of immigration status. Without community development block grants, though, they'll likely have to cut back on the services they provide to everyone. Eleanor Klibanoff, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY serves as the lead station. There are many days of note this week in the world of astronomy. Let's attend to the calendar with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. And Derek, if we start with this coming Wednesday, it is a rather poignant anniversary.
That's true, Dave. 13 years ago, on February 1st, it was a Saturday, I clearly recall, Space Shuttle Columbia broke up on reentry. It was certainly devastating to the Space Shuttle program.
Seven lives were lost,
and it was later understood that a piece of foam falling off of the external fuel tank struck the leading edge of one of the wings of the spacecraft and created a hole, actually opened a hole. And from launch through the entire mission, that was not a problem. But during reentry, coming back through the Earth's atmosphere, that hole allowed superheated gases to burn through the wing structure, and the wing structure began to fall apart, and then the rest of the spacecraft itself disintegrated.
Was there an awareness, though, in real time that that hole had been created during the flight, or not until reentry was it known to those on board?
The degree of damage was unknown. Actually, at the time, the degree of damage was unknown. There was some understanding that a chunk of foam had struck the leading edge of the wing, but that was not a highly unusual event. Pieces of foam had fallen off and struck the airframe before, but without anywhere near as much damage as was shown on the inspection of the spacecraft after it had landed. So it was not expected that this level of damage could take place.
And certainly in the short run, it dramatically changed the scheduling of manned flights.
Yes, we didn't get back to space shuttle missions for over 2 years, but in that ensuing 2.5 years, a number of measures were put in place to try to mitigate the result of another incident like that.
On a much lighter note, Thursday is Groundhog Day, but what does that have to do with astronomy?
Well, Groundhog Day is one of those very special days of the year that we talk about frequently. It's a cross-quarter day. We're halfway along the path from the first day of winter to the first day of spring. One of the first ways in which that change is seen, or our position along that path is noticed, is that we have 15 more minutes of daylight this week than we had last week. Day length is now up to 10 hours, 16 minutes, which is pretty good, and we're gaining about 15 minutes a week. And, you know, we'll, of course, we first see it on the evening side of the day because sunsets come later, faster than the sunrises come earlier.
Time to put away the snow shovel?
I would like to think so.
Derek, we have a moment left. What's available to be seen in the night sky this week?
Tonight, we can see Venus and Mars in the southwest sky. The moon will be just below Venus. And over the next several days, particularly tomorrow and Wednesday, the moon will step its way past Venus and past Mars. So this gives you an opportunity, particularly tomorrow night, to be able to identify where Mars is. It will be just to the right of the moon. In addition to this, International Space Station is visible in the evening sky over in the west tomorrow night, beginning at 6:34 in the evening in the southwest, and it will pass to the northwest and to the north over the next 8 minutes or so. It'll be 33 degrees above the horizon in the west, but you'll have a better chance on Wednesday night when at 5:45 p.m., Space Station comes up just to the right of those planets and passes what will look like overhead with a maximum elevation of 59 degrees. It'll look like a bright white object moving with good speed, and as I always say, as strange as it may seem, it will appear to have no sound. Of course, no one can hear you scream in space, so there's no wonder you can't hear Space Station either.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Fitz, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
If you find Earth boring, just the same old same thing.
That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old same thing. Come on, sign up without a space, Waze Incorporated.